So first of all, thanks to folks for attending. I'm Eric Bion. I am a founding partner at Centana Growth Partners. We're a growth equity firm focused solely on technology and innovation around financial services. And we've done a lot around identity and AI. With that, let me ask my co-panelists to quickly introduce themselves.
Sounds good. I'm Ronan Burke, CEO and co-founder of Inscribe. At Inscribe, we help companies automate manual reviews. So if you're verifying proof of income, proof of address, we can automate those reviews. We work with most or many of the largest fintechs in the US and have raised about $40 million to date.
Chris?
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Luttrell. I'm the CEO of Ideology. And we're doing company intros now. Is that what
yes,
we're doing?
Go for
all right,
it.
Company intros. So, Ideology, we're based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We have been in business for, nearly 20 years now. And we are part of a larger company called GBG, which is a global data and identity verification company out of the UK. We recently acquired Acuant and brought them into the family. So now we have Acuant and Ideology together in the US, providing identity verification, fraud prevention solutions, doc and bio. And this is our first conference where we've come together under one brand. So I'm excited that my team's here and excited to be here talking to y'all today.
Congratulations on bringing that all together.
Thank you.
So look, just to kind of get us started, this is a very active category. There are active fraudsters out there. So just to kind of get into the news a little bit, what are you guys seeing at each of your companies in terms of new types of fraud or changes in how people are showing up with identities that might not be theirs?
Yeah, I can take this. So one thing that we've seen, and we actually just released a fraud report today that you can find at inscribe.ai/trends, but one of the things that we found was that in documents such as bank statements, et cetera, we found that if the identity, such as a name or address, is modified or tampered with or fake, we also found that the credit information, such as the transactions in that data, is also highly likely to be fraudulent as well, and we've seen this up as far as 50% of cases. And so basically what this means is, you know, if your identity, such as your name or address, is being tampered with, you also need to correlate and check that very carefully with the credit information that's associated with that. So, you know, that's one trend we've been seeing. Secondly, I think we're also seeing the increase in collaboration and sharing of tips and tricks online of how to commit fraud. So like step-by-step instructions for fraudsters to follow, and also sharing of templates online of how to do these things, and also particular fintechs or banks that are vulnerable. And we've seen this swarming happening where, you know, if one fintech is seen to be vulnerable, somebody will post that online and, you know, they'll get hit with fraud, a spike in fraud will occur, and then they'll have to kind of close up the hatches afterwards. So yeah, there are two trends we've seen accelerate over the past couple of months. Yeah, it's been interesting following these.
Christina, how about you guys?
Well, we just came out of tax season, which we affectionately refer to as fraud season. So there's never a lack of new things that we're seeing there. We actually just had a customer conference last week where we talked about collaboration and coming together as industry, right? Because the fraudsters are collaborating online, and it's, you know, in the days like 3, 4, 5 years ago, people you would hear us talk about, oh, they're on the dark web and the marketplace. Collaborating, right? They're not even doing that. They're still there, but they're more brazen about it. I mean, you can go find Pinterest and other, you know, online stores where you can find templates, right? They're just, it's so in your face about, you know, what you can do there. But the things that we've seen, a lot of the same types of fraud that we've seen over the years, but it's just been accelerated. I think, you know, as the world has become more digital, we're just seeing more and more volume of what's coming through, things like synthetic identities. Synthetic has been around for at least 5 years, right? But it's been going on for so long, but it's just accelerating. And those identities that were created a few years ago are transacting now, right? And they're transacting with ease. I think it was right around 5 years ago, I wanted to understand synthetic a little bit better. And so I said, I'm going to go create a synthetic identity and see what happens, right?
Wow.
Yeah, and so I did, and it's still, my synthetic identity is still alive and well and receiving lots of credit card offers and life insurance offers and things like that. So, but we see just a huge amount of synthetic trying to come through. The other thing that we see is elder abuse. So a lot of elderly identities coming through where people are trying to go through and file tax returns or get other benefits, things like that. So a lot of the same that we've seen for a few years, but it's just accelerated. And some of that could be automation. Some of that is just there people are collaborating so much better than what we're doing as an industry.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, our companies have seen, as you're saying, just waves of attacks of all those versions, just hitting a wide range of different actors kind of all through it. Well, that is unfortunate. I think in the title of this panel is AI. So what are you guys seeing in terms of what AI can do to combat that, and that might be on the other side of some of this increased volume, right? As well as AI affecting things kind of going forward.
Yeah, so I think for us at Inscribe, our primary vector of helping companies is actually via documents and document fraud. And so the first thing that we've been using AI for many years now is actually just getting a greater understanding of the document first. So what type of document is this? Is it a bank statement, ID, tax form, utility bill, et cetera? And then once you understand what type of doc is it, what's within it, name, address, transactions, account number, et cetera. And so there's a lot of pre-processing and very helpful enablers that AI has been extremely powerful to utilize over the past number of years. And especially in the past 6 months, these models are getting to a point now where they can be superhuman. But then once you have all this data in like machine-readable format, we've been using AI to identify trends and anomalies. So first identify anomalies, then extrapolate into trends, and that's been super powerful. And one of the main advantages and powerful things about machine learning is just that it can consume huge amounts of data, way more than any kind of human could comprehend, and then find the trends within that. And over the past number of years, the amount and extent of data available has just been increasing at a dramatic rate, so much so that risk teams and ops teams, you can't really keep up unless you're using data science and machine learning. And so that's been hugely powerful for Inscribe and the product that we deliver in terms of increasing our precision and recall of detecting fraud and kind of staying ahead of the trends as well.
Yeah, so we're using AI machine learning in terms of classifying documents, but from a data perspective, which is another piece of our business where we're looking at data about individuals, not necessarily AI, it's machine learning, right? Because I think a lot of people get those two things very confused. I think what you're doing is very interesting, by the way, so good job on that. But I think that from our perspective, we train our models on a regular basis, and we do that through looking at the data that's already been processed, but we also have a human aspect to that, right? And we have a fraud team that on a daily basis goes in and looks to see if there's anything that needs to be added to the models, and they're looking at it to see this looks like fraud, and we're communicating with our customers and have feedback loops from our customers. So those feedback loops are really important. And I would say to any customers, if you have a company that's allowing you to have a feedback loop and you trust what they're doing with that data, I highly recommend it, because it only helps make the model stronger and better. And so we spend a lot of time looking at just what our customers tell us is fraud, what we know is fraud, and then feeding that back into the models so that then we can stop it on the front end. It's so much easier, it's so much cheaper, it's better to stop it on the front end than to let it get in, show your system, and then have to go on the back end and stop it on the back end.
So, Christina, since you differentiated a little bit between ML and AI, the buzzword that everyone's talking about now is generative AI. So I'm curious if you see applications either immediately or in the future for generative AI in combating identity fraud in particular.
I do. I think that, and again, I think we have to be cautious in how it's used. I don't want to jump ahead with your questions, because I've seen your questions, right? And I don't want to spoil the questions here, but I think that there is a use for it, and I think it can be very useful. Let's be honest, the fraudsters are using it. They're using it already, right? So we should be doing what we can to combat that. But I think we just have to be careful in terms of how it's used and making sure it's used responsibly.
Yeah, and just add in, I think the development of these models over the past couple of months probably does pose one of the largest threats and risks to financial services that we've ever seen. So very simple things, using generative AI to produce a very convincing pay stub or bank statement. And it's not just necessarily documents, it's also could be bank account data as well. And so you can ask these models to, hey, create 3 months of very consistent and convincing bank data in terms of debits and credits. Previously, you'd have to use a real account to get convincing information from that, but generative AI will be able to tell you, okay, set up a bank account, make these 4,000 transactions, you look like a very good business. This stuff hasn't been seen before. I think in terms of the battle of generative AI for fraudsters versus, what the vendors like Ideology and Inscribe can use, it is going to be a very competitive battle. And we're thinking a lot about it to make sure we can stay ahead.
But it's going to be a fun battle, right? We shouldn't get excited about fraud, but that's kind of what we're in it for, right? To fight fraud. And it's kind of fun when you can get in there and do something new to stop them.
Yeah, so I mean, that is fair enough, whether we call it fun or otherwise. That is kind of why we're all in this. So let me ask, generative AI has got a lot of controversy around it, right? And that's sort of not the subject of this panel, but there's been a lot of talk. We've all seen examples of bias being introduced into these models based on the training set or just even what's being encountered. Are you guys doing things actively in the way you're training your models to combat that bias? Do you think that's important? How do you think about that bias that we've all seen kind of incorporated into these types of technologies?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do here is just understand the population that you're trying to serve at your product, and then the training data that goes into that, make sure it's representative of that. So there's no point trying to serve a population but only having training data that comes from a subset of that. It's very important that it's actually representative. That's in the pre-training phase. And then post-training, I think it's incredibly important to have checks and balances in place and stress testing to make sure that these models are actually performing as expected. A lot of times you can just ship a model and then get on to the next piece of work, but it's incredibly important to have an equal amount of work post-production as well. And, I think a lot of companies are, developing a lot of stuff in-house now, and that the knowledge is being shared from academia into industry as well. But there's a lot of good stuff happening there, but probably not enough of it. And that's where regulation starts coming into play as well, which will likely play a pretty big role in terms of AI deployment in financial services, probably over the next 5 or so years. We haven't heard much about it yet in the industry, but it's going to become a thing, I think.
So I got to follow up on that. Absolutely, these biases come from the training set, and it's important to have a training set that mirrors the population that you're serving. How do you do that? So many of the training sets that are a little more available out there themselves have a bias in where that data is coming from. So how do you build those training sets? Any best practices?
Yeah, I think it just comes from an understanding and be willing and happy to say no. So there might be some customers that we'd love to serve, but we can't because we don't have a representative data set for them yet. For example, we'd love to serve some customers in certain regions of the world, but we just don't have data coverage there yet. We might have a little bit, but not enough that we're confident with. And so for me, I think the best thing is just be happy to say no if your product isn't able to serve that level to a point where you can really stand behind it. And I think for us, that's what we focus on, is being happy with saying no to certain areas.
So Chris, I think of GV Group as being this very global organization. So how do you think about the models and the issues of being representative?
Well, I think that the first step is just understanding there is bias in there. It's inherent, right? Where it's not, and I'm not saying GBG is doing that. I'm just saying AI in general around facial recognition, things like that. There's inherent bias that goes into that, into anything that goes into that technology. For us, I think the biggest thing in that I recommend is just transparency. You've got to have standards, you've got to have transparency, right? Especially if you're in a regulated industry, and the last thing you want to be doing is sitting in front of a regulator and they're going to ask you, well, explain your model, explain why you granted this person credit or why you passed this person through your system. And if you don't have a transparent model that you can explain, and it has to, explainability, then you're going to be in big trouble with the regulators.
Yeah, so that goes into a whole nother topic, but I'm noticing that we are almost out of time in this incredibly short panel. I can barely see you, but does anyone have any questions? If so,
We're all literally getting sunburns
up here
from this.
There is this QA thing that I suppose we'll put them on the screen. So feel free to either shout them out, or I guess raise your hand, or fill them out on the QR code. So with that, let me actually, Chris, while folks are thinking about questions, you can continue on the regulatory front, right? Regulators have never liked sort of black box solutions, and AI and ML, where it starts, is inherently there. What have you been able to do in sort of convincing the regulators to work with these sorts of technologies?
Well, for us, it is the transparency. We explain how it works. We have explainability, and we don't try to hide anything. And we don't try to hide anything from our customers. We definitely don't try to hide anything from regulators. And so, and we want to be on the forefront of that. We want to be on the forefront of any kind of regulations that might come up. Here in New York, for example, there's already regulation around hiring, around recruitment and employment. And there has to be a bias audit that occurs every year now, just for that. That's going to expand to other industries. It's just going to. So I think everyone just needs to be prepared to have a document that says, here's how it works. And you don't have to give away your secret sauce and your patents and things like that, but you need to be able to explain what's happening.
And Ronan, you mentioned the regulators at the tail end of your question as well. How are you guys having a lot of interactions with that in your day-to-day world?
Yeah, I think where regulations come in today for us is like, if our results are contributing to credit decisions, there are various existing regulations that we kind of need to be careful with there. But with respect to regulations and how AI is developed, it's still like relatively early, but we're keeping a mindful eye of what they could be. For example, a lot of it is to do with explainability and, making sure we're taking the right precautions pre and post model creation. And, I think with respect to this, I think it is important that the government does get it right. On one hand, I think it is a force for good in terms of making sure that fairness and equality and the reduction of biases is actually produced, but you also don't want to hinder advancements in innovation. At the moment, you can pretty much train models, deploy them to the world without much oversight. And we've seen this recently with some of the large AI companies. You kind of just do what you want. However, that's good for like small startups who can quickly get stuff to market. But if you imagine a world where regulations do come in terms of the development of these models, it's very easy to see that the smaller startups and companies won't be able to kind of compete with the larger companies who already have policy teams and 100 people to work on regulations and keeping it in check. And so I think when it is actually deployed, it'll be very important to have innovation top of mind, but also deploying it in a way that of course protects the consumers as well.
So we're getting questions, but I particularly like the very first one here. So let me just ask very simply to each of you, does your company incorporate behavioral biometrics into your identity analysis? Ronan?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We're working on some stuff behind the scenes with respect to this. So when I think of behavioral biometrics, it's like how does a human behave before or during their application or while they're a customer of the account? And this is been an area of work that many companies have been tackling over the past number of years, and I think technically it's actually getting easier and easier to do. But what isn't easy is collecting the right data that can actually provide uplift above and beyond other solutions. And so I do think AI is going to make behavioral biometrics quite a relatively easy thing to build and do. So long as you have the data, and oftentimes you need that data coming from different sources. And so if you're just tracking behavioral biometrics by themselves, I don't think that'll be enough to be competitive. You'll also need to combine that with other data points, such as what customer-provided information or user permission data from services like Plaid as well. When you combine behavioral biometrics with that data, I think there's a lot of opportunity there above and beyond what exists today with existing behavioral biometric solutions.
And Christina, first, are you guys using behavioral biometrics? And if so, how do you see that incorporating that or not?
Right now at Ideology, we are not using behavioral biometrics, but we are looking at some interesting things in the industry. For example, NeuroID, I don't know if you all have heard of them, but they have a really cool product that is making some interesting waves in the space. So, but there's some good stuff out there.
Got it. Okay, great. Well, we are, appreciate the other questions. We are technically out of time, but I want to end on one of mine, which is, you know, when you go walk the floor out there, there's a whole couple of rows of folks doing things about identity. And then I know all of us have been at other conferences seeing lots of other little startups. What area, or even if you want to mention a company, but what area around this whole identity space do you think there's the most interesting innovation going on in? Other than at your own company?
Tricky question. I think the big thing for me is understanding that identity is so much more than your name, SSN, email address. I think it goes beyond that, and it covers things such as where you live, how much you earn, what businesses you're associated with, how much revenue that business has. I think historically, when you say identity, you just think, like, who is this person? But that's a very broad question. And I think, you know, historically, folks haven't asked the deeper questions because the operational burden to get the information on that has just been so great. You need a huge operations team, a huge risk team, a huge team of underwriters to properly collect it all. However, with the advancement of AI, more data sources, it's actually becoming possible to get a very good, deep picture of customers more and more. So I'm super interested in identity expanding to the full picture of the person or business, and that excites me a ton.
I agree with that. I think that I've seen some interesting stuff out on the floor. I love the behavioral biometrics like we just talked about. I think there's some good stuff happening there. More data around, you know, device data, mobile data. There's a lot of fraud in mobile, right? So just having a lot of good information there. Business data, right? We think business identity, but people are tied to those businesses. So that's something that I find interesting as well. But I always like to go to the little startup booths too, because that's where there's some really cool ideas that are happening.
Great. Well, thank you to both of you, and thanks to the conference for having us. I assume we'll all be around for at least a little while further if folks have other questions. Otherwise, thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you. Y'all.